And we're holding on page Gimel in Yerushalmi, beginning Masechet Pesachim. So the last paragraph on the page, which is labeled Masechet Pesachim Perek Aleph. Beginning of Masechet Pesachim, as we know, it talks about Bedikas Chametz, Or La'abos, Abodikim Esach Chametz, La'ur Aner. And so there's the question, why Davka La'ur Aner? Why use a candle? And why Davka do it at night? So the Bavli deals with it at length and discusses the point that by night everybody is home and Or Aner Yofel Bedika, the candlelight is bright and therefore you can see well there. So the Yerushalmi expands on that point, that even, for example, even if you're someplace which otherwise is very dark no matter what, even so, a candlelight is going to be naturally brighter during the nighttime than it is during the daytime. And in fact, one of the Chachamim mentions just that. He says there was a period of time when we were hiding out from the Romans or whoever it was, and we were hiding in caves. And how could we tell when it was day versus night? Was we would light candles and we would see whether when they were brighter, we knew it was night. And when it was dimmer, when they were dimmer, we knew it was day. So in a similar vein, the Gemara says, Rabbi Acha Omer, Noach had the same situation in the Teva. Noach, b'knisosi l'teva, hichnisi imay avonim tervis amagolius. When Noach went into the Teva, he took along with him precious stones and pearls. B'shar shahoyu, and they would naturally reflect whatever light there is. B'shar shahoyu kehois, so when the light is dimmer, hoyo yideh shahu yoyim, then he would know it was daytime. Or b'shar shahoyu mavhikos, and when they were shining brightly, hoyo yideh shahu laila, then he would know it was night. Now, you have to ask, why would Noach have to know? Mela, for example, these people that are hiding out in the cave, as in the previous piece of Gemara, they have to know because they need to know when to daven and so forth. But Noach, what's the difference? He didn't have hinam mitzvahs yet. So the answer is lama, yesh chaya echelas v'yem, yesh chaya echelas v'layla. Because the animals have different schedules. Some animals are nocturnal, some are diurnal. So some of them eat by day, some of them eat by night. And Noach and his family had to be on duty 24-7 and know to be able to give each animal in its right time. As we know, the famous story, he was late with feeding the lion and then kicked him. So they had to know whether it's day and whether it's night. So the Gemara asks, why did he need that? Doesn't the pasuk say that Hashem tells him make a tsoihar for the teva? And one explanation of tsoihar is that it was a window. Now there are in fact different opinions. In fact, Rashi brings on the pasuk whether it was a window or whether it was precious stones. If you say it was precious stones, well, there you have your answer. There you have your answer that tsoihar wasn't a window. Even then, Eitz Yosef points out, you do have at the end of the Mabul, near the end of the Mabul, where it says that Noach opened up as Chaloin HaTeva, Asha also the window. So one way or the other, there was a window. So why do they need precious stones and pearls to know whether it's day or night? Why can't they just look out the window? And the answer is, Commander Omele Shimshu Mazolis Vishnasa Mabul. This that we're saying over here, that Rabbi Acha is saying that he took along the precious stones and pearls, follows the opinion that the Mazolis, that the sun and moon and planets did not function normally during the Mabul. In effect, it's almost like as if time stood still during that year. So therefore, you couldn't look and see when the sun is rising and when the various heavenly bodies are rising and setting, because they weren't functioning as normal during the Mabul. So therefore, he needed the precious stones and pearls, and those would work on this on more or less a 24-hour cycle, and he would be able to tell that way. Which in that case, then Hakosev and Eitz Yosef both point out, well, according to that opinion, what was the point of having a window then? Mela, if you say that the Mazolis did function during the Mabul, then okay, but if they didn't, then why have a window anyway? And the answer is because later on he's going to have to see when the water is starting to dry up, and he's going to use it to send out the Orev and the Yona and so on and so forth. So for that he needed a window, but not necessarily to see throughout the year of the Mabul what time it is, because he wouldn't have been able to tell anyway. This point, by the way, of whether Shimshu or Mazolus or Lo Shimshu or Mazolus Mishnas HaMabul has an interesting implication. So we count our years, of course, since Ma'aseh Bereishis. If you say that Lo Shimshu Mazolus Mishnas HaMabul, then one way of looking at it is brought in some Sfarim, maybe we should have the Mabul we know began in the year 1656 since creation. Because if you add up the figures that you have in Parshas Bereishis of that Pliny was so and so old when he fathered so and so forth, all the 10 generations from Adam to Noach, you get that Noach was born in the year 1056, and the Mabul began in the 600th year, which is 1656. So now the marble lasted just over a year. It began, according to one opinion, Yud Zayin Cheshvan, and ended Chav Zayin Cheshvan. According to the other opinion, Yud Zayin Iyar and ended Chav Zayin Iyar. Either way, it was one solar year. So was it now the year, the next year, 1657, or do we say the mazalis weren't functioning, and therefore you'd still call it the same year? So there are Rishonim who talk about the possibility that maybe in fact you should be subtracting 1 year from the count Liyitzira to account for that. In practice, we don't do that. Next, Perek Kol Shah. So the Perek begins by talking about various dinim of chometz before and during and after Pesach, and then later on in the Perek it talks about the dinim of matzah and morer, what minim you can use for matzah and what minim you can use for morer. Now the Mishnah lists there are five basic minim that you could use for morer, and one of them is chazeres. And chazeres, both you in the Yerushalmi and also in the Bavli, is defined as lettuce, specifically romaine lettuce. So chazeres hasivun. So the chachmei hayeshiva asked, "Vare chazeres moset kol atzmai? Lettuce is sweet. So how can you use it for morer?" Amar Reb Chiya kol atzman im silul machazeres. So Reb Chiya says because the whole period of the Jewish people what being in Mitzrayim is very much like chazeres in that sense. Ma chazeres chilosin mosik v'soifin mar. So lettuce is that. It begins sweet, and eventually if you leave it growing too long and it becomes hardened, then it becomes not only hardened but also bitter. Ach also Mitzrayim la'aveseinu b'Mitzrayim. That's exactly what the Mitzrayim did to our ancestors in Mitzrayim. But chila b'meitav ha'aretz hoshev esavicha v'asachacha. First, Hara is inviting Yosef, invite your brother, your father, and your brothers, and let them settle in the best part of Mitzrayim, and so forth. And then they made their lives bitter. So in token of that, we use lettuce for morer, representing that change in policy on behalf of how the Mitzrayim acting. Which the point is then that the point is, even though all five minim that it mentions in the Mishnah are able to be used equally well for murder, but lachatchila you should use chazeres when it's available, which is what we do. We use that together with horseradish. But the point is, we do make a point of using chazeres. The Bavli mentions this point as well, because of this point that the Yerushalmi is making, as well as another point as well. The Gemara mentions that another word for lettuce is chasa, which represents the chos that Hashem had rachmonos on us and took us out of Mitzrayim. Within that itself, by the way, here the Yerushalmi is mentioning the point that to begin with, the Mitzrayim treated the Jews nicely, and then later on they started embittering them. Within that, another way of looking at it that Mefoshim point out is even within the enslavement itself, they started out nice. We have a big public works project. Everybody who's civic minded, everybody who's patriotic, come and work, and we'll pay you. And then once they're in there already, then they schlep them in and kept them as slaves. So yeah. All right, Perek Mokum Shenagu, the fourth Perek of Masechta Pesachim, begins by talking about the concept that, now like this, you're not allowed to do melacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. In general, you're not supposed to do melacha on any Erev Yom Tov after Chatzos. We're going to learn something about it in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Be'ez Hashem, and a person does, he doesn't see a siman bracha from it, but Erev Pesach is more stringent in that regard, and the Yerushalmi explains before this part over here that the reason is because that was the day they brought the Korban Pesach, and therefore it's considered like a miniature Yom Tov for everybody. And even now that we don't have a Korban Pesach, nevertheless the Takana is still in effect. So then the Mishnah begins by mentioning Mokum Shenagu, there were places where they had the minhag to also not do malacha on Erev Pesach morning. And then if you're in such a place or visiting such a place, then you have to follow that minhag and otherwise not. So since the Yerushalmi mentions the reason why you can't do malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos is because at the time of bringing the Korban Pesach, and therefore it's like a Yom Tov for you. So that leads the Gemara into the point that we know in general, by Korbanos, you had the whole concept of Ma'amodos, which we learned about in Masechta Tainis, that there were groups of Yisraelim who were designated that they would go and represent all the Jewish people when the Korbanos Tzibur are being brought. Some of them would actually stand there in the Beis Mikdash and watch it being brought as representatives of the whole Jewish people. Others would stay in their cities all over Eretz Yisrael and do special tefillos and kriyas and readings in the Torah and so on and so forth on behalf of the Jewish people. Anyway, so the the Gemara here mentions that point. And so then, Tony Reb Shimon Elazar, HaKoyanim V'Alevim V'Yisrael V'Shir Ma'akvenes HaKorban. There's four things that you have to have by the Korbanos Tzibur in order for them to be good. You have to have the Koyanim doing the Avodah, of course. You have to have the Levim, who are going to be there to sing and to play the instruments. You need Yisraelim, who are going to be the, again, who are going to be the members of the Maimed over there. And Vashir, and you need to have a song. The Levim are singing and playing the instruments. So all of those things are necessary. For the korban. HaKosev talks over here at some length, and he brings also there's parenthetical notes also from Yefei Mare that discuss in greater detail. For example, it sounds like we're talking about any kind of korban, but is that really so? I mean, any kind a private person brings a korban, for example, you don't have shir involved with it. The kohenim don't, the levim rather, don't sing and play instruments when an individual is bringing his korban. They do by the korban tzibur. So we're talking about by korban yochid. Instead, what you have is vidur. But what we mean is, in other words, basically that you have the certain kinds of korbanos, in particular the korbanos tamid and the korbanos musaf, need to have all four of those things. So Rab Ovin Taima de Rab Shimon. So Rab Ovin explained where does Rab Shimon get that from? That all four of those things are necessary for the korbanos. So you have Sukkim and Divrei Yomim that describe when Chizkiyahu first became king, and his father Ochaz had been a terrible Rosha and brought Avodah Zarah into the Beis Mikdash and stopped the Avodah and so on and so forth. So now, as soon as Chizkiyahu became king, then he was working to change that and to have the Beis Mikdash cleaned up and to restart the Avodah and make a big public thing of it, so everybody should be inspired to continue it. So the Pasuk describes in detail how he got everybody there, as many people as possible, for the Chanukah. And the Pasuk describes the whole Pasuk goes like this. First of all, we'll read the Pasuk, and then we'll see how the Gemara explains it phrase by phrase. The whole congregation was bowing, and the song was being sung, and the trumpets were being blown. All of that was being done until the Ola finished being brought. So Rab Ovin explains that Rab Shimon darshins as follows: when it says the whole congregation was bowing, that refers to the Yisraelim who were there, which includes the members of the Maimed who are there as representatives of the whole Jewish people. When it says the song was being sung and played, that refers to the Levim because they're the ones who sing. And when it continues, the trumpets were being blown, Elo HaKoyanim, that's the Koyanim, because the Koyanim are the ones who blow the Chatzotzos, with Ne'ar and HaKoyanim Yisku B'Chatzotzos, HaKoyal Ad L'Chloisa Ola, and when the Pasuk says, All of this until the Ola was finished, meaning HaKol Ma'ach V'Nes HaKorban, all of these are necessary for the Korban to be kosher. Eitz Yosef actually explains that what we mean over here is not necessarily the shir is not in and of itself so ma'akiv. What it means is that with the korban you bring nesachim, and with most korbanos the shir is sung while the nesachim are being poured on the mizbeach. You have the flour and wine and oil that goes with many kinds of korbanos, with oilus and shlomim and certain other korbanos, and the shir is sung while the nesachim are being offered, and the nesachim are not completely essential to the korban, in the sense that even if you didn't bring the nesachim, then nevertheless the korban is kosher. But in other words, the point is that when nesachim are being brought, there has to be shir with it. The Gemara continues. Reb Tanchuma Shtoma Lamin Hoda. Reb Tanchuma says, I have a different source in a pasuk for what Reb Shimon Elazar is saying, that all four of these things are necessary. Because after all, the pasuk that Reb Ovin brings is from Ksuvim. A pasuk from Chumash is much stronger. The pasuk says, "Va'etnas alavim nesunim la'aron alavonav." So again, let's read the whole pasuk first. "Va'etnas alavim," Hashem says, "I've given over the levim nesunim la'aron alavonav." They're given over to Aaron and his sons. Lavedes avodas bnei Yisrael, to do the avodah on behalf of the Jewish people, or lachaper al bnei Yisrael, and to atone on behalf of the Jewish people. And the Jewish people, there won't be a plague among the Jewish people. And it finishes off, Vegeshes, but Israel, El HaKodesh, if they come too close to the Kodesh, meaning the Yisraelim are only supposed to go a certain distance into the Beis HaMikdash or into the Mishkan. And if they go any further, they're Chayiv Misa B'dei Shemayim, so therefore the Levim have the job of guarding the Mishkan and making sure they don't do that. So now, Rabbi Tanchuma darshins that phrase by phrase as follows. When it says, I gave over the Levim, that they were given over to Aaron and his sons, Elu HaLevim, so that means the Levim. When it continues, Lavadis Avodas B'nai Yisrael, the ones who are doing the Avoda on behalf of the Jewish people, Elu HaKoyanim, that has to be the Koyanim, because they're the ones who do the Avoda. To be sure, Eitz Yosef points out elsewhere, the Gemara explains, the Bavli and Erchin explains that actually the words Lavadis Avodis B'nai Yisrael refer to the shir, refer to the song by the Korbanos. So from the word lavod wouldn't imply that it has to be. So therefore, instead, we have from the word lachaper implies that it has to be there as part of the kapara. So when it continues, lachaper al b'nei Yisrael zehashir, when it continues to atone on behalf of the Jewish people, that means the singing, because that helps be part of the kapara as well. Which in that case, HaKosef points out, the lesson we can learn from that now that we don't have korbanos currently is that the main kapara is when we sing and we praise and we daven to Hashem. And when the pasuk finishes off, when the pasuk continues, there won't be a plague among the Jewish people. The Yisrael, that means the Yisraelim who are there. That again, the point is they're there, but they have to make sure not to get too close. Here, they're there as the members of the Maimed. Their job is to represent all the Jewish people there. Nevertheless, they have to be careful not to get too close. But the very fact that the Eitz Yosef points out, the implication is the very fact that they were saying they shouldn't get too close implies that they're there. And therefore, so the Pasuk is saying all of those things are necessary for the Korban to be, the Pasuk is implying, therefore, that all those things are necessary for the Korban. Perek Misha Hayatome or Perek Avip Sachim. So Perek Misha Hayatome, the ninth Masechta of the Perek, talks about the Dinim of Pesach Sheni. And at the end of it, it talks about some miscellaneous dinim about the Korban Pesach, and then Perek Arvei Pesachim is all about the dinim of the Seder. So at the near the end of at the towards the end of Perek Misha Hayatome, it describes a scenario as follows. Suppose you have it describes a few different variations on a scenario. It was actually in Rambam Shlosha Prakim a few days ago. So take one example. Suppose you have a group whose animal for their Korban Pesach got lost. So they ask one member of their group, can you go look for it? He says, okay, but I may not make it back in time. So if I don't make it back in time, then take another animal and shecht it for the group and have me in mind as well. Then what happens is, then you get into complications. What happens if he did find the animal and he didn't know? He wasn't able to keep in touch with them. It's not like they had cell phones, you know. And so they ended up shechting one, having him in mind, and he also shechted one. So it's going to depend which one was shechted first in terms of which one he can eat from, because you can't be registered for two korbanos Pesach. It's one or the other. Then you have the opposite case where he goes and looks for it, and they tell him, you shechted having us in mind. There's various variations in the mission over there. And you have cases actually you have cases where you don't know which one was shechted first, and the result is because of a suffix, then they don't get to eat from the Korban Pesach, because you can't be sure which one you were registered for. And again, you can't eat from a Korban Pesach that you weren't registered for. Now, then the Mishnah goes on to describe the last case. Suppose that he's going to look for it, and they're meanwhile going to take another animal and shecht it. Now, what happens if neither one says anything to the other? So they like signal to him. They make motions like, you go and look for it, and if you find it, then shecht it for us. And he makes motions as if to say, and if you find it, then you shecht it on my behalf. But nobody actually said anything. So then the Mishnah says, "Einan achroyim zelazeh." Neither one is responsible for the other. In other words, each one will eat from their respective Korban Pesach. So each one ends up good. They're all going to have. Each of them is going to have a Korban Pesach to eat from. He'll have the one that he shechted, and he'll have other people join with him. They'll have the one that they shechted, and everyone's good. So the Yerushalmi mentions over here, and the Bavli mentions also the point. So you see, in other words, the point is by being quiet, they all gain. When they said something, when he said, you shecht on my behalf, or they said, you shecht on our behalf, then that can create problems. But if they don't say anything, even though they're making motions and then noises and whatever, but they don't actually say anything, then they all gain. So Tony Dapriya, Yofesh Sikha L'Chachamim. You see from that that being quiet is good even for Chachamim. Kavachoyim L'Tipshim, how much more so for fools, that if they're quiet, then they're much better off. V'chein Shloima Omar, as Shloima Melch says in Mishle, Gam Evel Machrish Chacham Yechoshev, even a fool, when he's quiet, will be thought to be wise. Ein Sorech Lema, Chacham Machrish, needless to say then, if a Chacham is quiet, then it's even better. Now, HaKosev goes into a long point over here that he says, you know, when you get down to it, being quiet can mean two different things. It can mean Poshet sitting there dumbly and not saying anything. And it can be that you have something meaningful to say, and you say what you're supposed to say, and then you stop, whether because you don't want to continue, whether you don't want to make an argument, or because you realize that what you're saying is not quite correct, or whatever it is. He says the kind of shtika that Rav Chiya is praising over here is really the second kind. The first kind, to just sit there and not say anything, is not really that good at all. That's antisocial. So no, what it means is when you're saying, you know what to say and you know what not to say, that's the kind of shtika that we're praising over here. And we're saying that even a tipish is better off with that kind of shtika, how much more so a wise person. In that connection, they say, for example, about the Chofetz Chaim, you know, he literally wrote the book on Lashon Hara. So I've seen it pointed out, you know, you'd think somebody like that who's super careful about Lashon Hara, he must be like a, you know, the kind of person that's very hard to have a conversation with. Anytime you say something, he's likely to tell you Lashon Hara. But no, actually, people who knew him when he was nifter 90 years ago, but people who knew him back in the day said that actually he was a great conversationalist because he knew what to say, and he knew exactly what to say and what not to say. So that's the kind of shtika that HaKosev is explaining over here, that's the kind of shtika that Rav Chiya is praising. Eitz Yosef also points out that what you have is, in other words, first we're saying that shtika is better for Chachamim, kal v'chomer for tipshim, and then we seem to be saying the other way around, that even a fool is quiet, he'll be considered a Chacham, needless to say a Chacham. So what is it? Which one is the more obvious thing, and which one is the less obvious thing? So he says, okay, what it means is, in other words, that it's better for Tipshim to be silent, but nevertheless, to say Chocham Yechoshev applies better to a Chocham. You're saying that even a Tipish, even an Evil, is quiet, people will think that he's a Chocham. Well, how much more so a Chocham who knows to be quiet at the appropriate times, people are going to realize that he really is a Chocham. Okay. Next, in Perek Arev Psachim, so eventually it talks about the Haggadah, and it talks about the Abba Bonim Divrei Torah. So Tani Rav Chiya Kneged Dalad Bonim Divrei Torah Chola. The Torah talks and tells you what to say to four different types of children. Now here we're going to have it a little differently than we're familiar with. We're familiar with the way we have it in the Bavli, which is the way it is in the Haggadah. Here we're going to have the Yerushalmi has a different version of it. Ben Chacham Mahuimer, what does the wise son say? So that we have like it is in the Haggadah. What are the various categories of mitzvahs that Hashem commanded you? But now in the Haggadah, we have that we answer him, Kehuchsa Pesach. Here, no, af after emeloi, no. Here the Yerushalmi says, you're answering him, b'chozek yodet yonu Hashem mitzrayim. Hashem took us out from Mitzrayim with a strong hand, which in the Haggadah is the answer for the Ben Tam. So HaKosev explains, in other words, that the Chacham is mainly asking, one of his questions is that why are we eating the Korban Chagiga before the Korban Pesach? If the main thing of Pesach is supposed to be the Korban Pesach, then we should be eating the Chagiga first. So therefore, we should be eating the Pesach first. So we answer him, Ein Maftir, Nachar Pesach HaFikom, and we want to keep it. Taste of the Pesach in our mouth, and therefore we want to eat it, and therefore we want to eat it last. But over here, the Yerushalmi is taking a different view of it. We tell him in general, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with a strong hand, and that's the answer. That's the answer for the Ben Choch. In fact, our Kosev explains, in other words, because after all, you have the Psukim in Parshas Voschanan, which is where you have the question of the Ben Chochem. You have over there a whole Arichus that the father goes on. Avodim Hayunu L'Farah B'Mitzrayim, Vayitin Hashem Oisis Moifsim B'Mitzrayim, Voisonu Hoitzim Misham, Vayitzavenu Hashem. So Ein Maftirin Achra Pesach HaFikoyman doesn't include all of that. So therefore, the Yerushalmi prefers to understand that, no, that's the answer to the Ben Chochem is Taka to tell him about all the details of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Hashem took us out of there. So you start with B'chozek Yod, and you go on and explain to him the rest of the details of that Hashem took us out from there, B'yod Chazaka, and Vayitzavenu Hashem, etc. Next, Ben Rosh Mahu Ema, what does the Rosh say? Maha Avodah Azos Lachem, which means one meaning of Maha Avodah Azos Lachem. The Yerushalmi teaches out, Maha Torah Hazesh Shatam Atrichim Olav B'chol Shana V'Shana. Why are you going to such a bother about it every year? Which, in other words, one point of it is he's acting as though the mitzvahs are just given by Hashem in order to harass us and then make life difficult for us, which is a very wrong thing to say. So having taken himself out of the klal and acted as though he's not part of the Jewish people, he's saying, Lochem, afata emer loy, so you also tell him, Bahake es shinav, and blunt his teeth, and tell him, Bavruza osa Hashem li, betesim mitzrayim, Hashem did this for me when I left Mitzrayim, implying li osa, loy osa, he did it for me, he didn't do it for you, ilohoya osa ish b'mitzrayim, if that person, meaning you, had been in Mitzrayim, loy hoya roishi go misham la'olam, he wouldn't have deserved to ever be taken out of that gullah. So basically the same as we have in the Haggadah. Of course, there's many, many nuances in it. There's the famous explanation from the Rebbe that we tell them if you were there before Matan Torah, then you would have been stuck there because at that time, whether you were a Yid depended on your choice, whereas nowadays it's not a matter of choice, it's a matter of Atav Hartonu Mikola Amim, and therefore no matter what, you're coming with us by the Gola Amitis Vashlema, and so forth. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, by the way, has an interesting point on when he says, Maha Avoda Azos Lachem. He's saying, I can understand when there's a Beis Mikdash and more or less we're free from Goyish domination. So then it's reasonable to have a Korban Pesach and to have a whole Seder. But now, when we're anyway enslaved and then subjugated by the Goyim, Maha Avoida, who needs this whole Avoida over here? And so we tell him that that's not how it works. Next. Ben Tipish Mahoemer. Now in the Haggadah we have Tam Mahoemer. Here the Yerushalmi instead of Tam has Tipish, which means, in other words, Sarkosif says the point is a Tam would be somebody who's Tomim, Mutaka, he understands, but he's simple. He has the simplicity that a Yid should have. Tomim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha. But here he's just asking Mazois. He's Ben Tipish Ma'oimer Mazois. He's like not even bothering to get into the details of the question to ask a good question. He just like almost tosses off a question. So therefore, we call him a Tipish. So afata lamdoi b'hilchas haPesach in maftirin achra Pesach haFikoyman. So you want to go into the details with him. He, Taka, in other words, we're not talking about that he's a simple person who has no understanding. We're talking about that he's a tippish in that he doesn't try to put in any effort into the question. So we want to explain to him, Akosiv explains, he's thinking, oh, well, we have a whole yomtiv meal. It must be, you know, the whole point of it is to stuff our faces with food. So we tell him that to know the whole point is that we should remember all the concepts of Tzias Mitzrayim and everything that comes out of that and all the Amuna and the Ebishter and so forth. And therefore, Ein Maftir and Achra Pesach Afikoyman. So don't think that here you're going to finish with us at the Seder and then you're going to go to somebody else's house and you're going to find more to eat over there. No, be aware that after you're done here, that's it. This is how you fulfill the Ebishter's mitzvahs. So that's the answer to the Ben Tipish, says the Gemara here. Mahu afikoyman. Now, when we say imaftir nachar pesach afikoyman, what does that actual word afikoyman mean? Shaloi, exactly that. Shaloi yehi omid machavura zu v'nichnas lachavura acheres. It means he shouldn't leave one group and go to another group. When it comes to the korban pesach, you're not allowed to do that because you're not allowed to eat from two different korbanos pesach, and you also can't eat in two different groups. But here, even with the Seder, the point is once you finished eating the matzah, once you finished eating afikoyman by the Seder, then you have to keep the taste of it in your mouth and you can't go eat by somebody else. So our Kosev goes on to explain that's why he's bringing the reason why he brought these two things in one paragraph, the Yofesh Sikkel HaChachamim and the Keneged Abba Bonim Divrei Torah, that we see that sometimes it is good to speak longer. You see that the Chacham is giving a long question, Maha Edes VaChukim VaMishvatim, showing that he really understands that there are different classes of mitzvahs. And we give him Taka a good answer, as opposed to the one who just asks Mazois, then we label him a tippish. Because you should put in. So in other words, the point is that on the one hand, we're saying that shtika is yofa l'chachamim and kavachomim l'tipshim, but it depends, again, what kind of shtika. There's a time to speak and there's a time not to speak, and a person has to know which is the appropriate kind of shtika and which is not. Okay, v'she'en yedei lishol apsach le'tchila. Then you have the one who doesn't even know how to ask, and you have the famous explanation of the Rebbe, he doesn't care to ask. Anyway, apsach le'tchila, then you initiate the conversation with him, because even though he's not asking, you still need to teach him. Amr Rabbi Yosa, so Rabbi Yosa says, Masnisa Amr Kain. The Mishnah expresses exactly that point. If the son doesn't have the das to know what to ask, Oviv Malamdo, then his father has to teach him, and the Mishnah goes on to list the questions of Manishtana. So we see that even if the child is too young or apathetic or whatever to ask, then you still need to get him to ask, to get him in that frame of mind to understand that it's important to ask. In one of his writings, I have a Haggadah at home that has an anthology of commentaries by Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, drawn from his various writings on Chumash and Tillim and various other writings. He comments over there sometimes. You know, you have kids who when they were kids they asked and they never got good answers, and eventually they gave up asking. So the point is, you're faced with somebody like that by your seder, then you need to reteach them the concept of that you should ask, and you'll tackle give them an answer. Okay, Masech the Shkolim, Perek Be'echa Ba'adar. So here, Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Chaviv tells us he's going to give us a lot more parts of Shkolim than he does from the rest of the Masechtas of Yerushalmi, of the Seder, because again, Masechtas Shkolim has no Gemara Bavli. It only has Yerushalmi, and so he doesn't want, as long as he has 11 of the 12 Masechtas, he might as well have the 12th, and therefore he's going to give us a lot of the Mishnayos as well, unlike what he does in the rest of Ein Yaakov, and we'll learn lessons in Avodah from those Mishnayos. So the Mishnah begins, but Mishnah Rishona, but Echad Ba'adar, Mashneem Al Ashkolim Val Kalayim. On the first of Adar, they would make an announcement all over Eretz Yisrael about Machzah Shekel, that it's time to start getting ready for Machzah Shekel, because they're going to be collecting it during Chodesh Adar. Val Kalayim, and also about if people have Kalayim in their fields, this is the time, Adar time, is when they're stoning the sprout, and it'll be noticeable. So they announce that everybody should go and check it out, and then take out any Kalayim that's growing over there. Over Hamisha Osaboy, next comes the 15th of Adar, Kurinus Amagilla Bakrakim. Then we lay in the Megillah in walled cities. Now, the Mishnah is not here to tell us all the dinim of Adar, which is why it doesn't mention the 14th we read in unwalled cities. It's just focusing on the things that happen on the 15th of Adar, and of which one of them happens to be reading the Megillah in walled cities. Umasaknamas Adrochim, Beistin would work on fixing the roads, Vesarachoivis, and the squares. In particular, you have the roads to the Orin Miklat need to be made, smoothed out and made and remove any obstacles. So that kind of thing. The point is, during the winter time, the roads were all muddy and there's no sense trying to fix them anyway. Now that it's basically the end of the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael, then it's time to start fixing up the roads and the paths and squares and whatnot. There's Mikveh HaMayim and the Mikvois, where people are going to need to tovel. Also, the Masaknamas Adrochim Veserachovis is also to prepare for the Oyle Regal. They're going to be coming on a Leil Regal soon for Pesach, so they need good roads. Ves Mikvois Amayim is, again, people are going to need to tovel when they're coming on a Leil Regal. And in general, people need to tovel throughout the year for various purposes in those times, much more so than now, where they were careful with the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. So again, now it's the end of the winter. You have any Mikvois that have gotten damaged during the winter, so now they make sure they have enough water, they clean them out, etc. V'oisin called tzorchei rabim, based in works on any other tzorchei rabim, any other public needs. And the Yerushalmi actually mentioned, the Gemara mentions, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara mentions a whole bunch of things, including things that don't necessarily have a particular season. For example, it mentions things like Egla Arufa and Soita and so forth. Those are not mitzvahs Eser Shazman Grama. But again, practically speaking, now that Beis Din is starting to work on Inyonim of the Tzibur, such as the roads or whatever, so they also check and see, they also start putting on their calendar to deal with these various kinds of things, which again, may not have been done during the winter, because traveling is harder now that it's getting to be the spring and summertime, where it'll be easier to travel. Then it's time to start dealing with all those things. With Sinan Akvaris, Bastin would also send out people to mark graves. You have to be careful, because when there are graves, then there's truma over there, and people have to be careful with truma. People who are Koyanim who are eating truma, Yisraelim who are handling truma, anybody who's dealing with anybody who's coming to bring korbanos, etc. So they would mark them by pouring plaster, by pouring white lime around on and around the caver. The Yerushalmi deals over here in detail with some of the dinim of that. The Bavli deals with more of the details of it in the Masechta Mod Cotton, specific details of how where they would mark it, how far from the grave would they mark, and various other dinim. The point is, again, that this lime tends to wash away during the winter, what with the rain. So now, again, 15th of Adar, the rainy season is basically over, so it's time to mark them again. The Yotzin Afala Kilayim, and they would go out and check whether people have actually gotten rid of their Kilayim as they're supposed to. So here we have a Shchodesh Adar. They announced about it, but now they have to actually go and see whether in fact people actually took care of it. Which Eitz Yosef points out then that a difference is all the other ones are kind of reshus. They don't have to do the other things if it's not, for example, if the roads happen to be in good shape after a winter, they don't need to work on fixing them. If it doesn't happen that there are any sotis that they have to deal with giving them the drink, then fine, they don't have to. But here, regardless, they have to go out and see how the farmers are doing with their kalayim and take care of the matter. So Akosif explains over here the reason why he brings in this Mishnah. First of all, we see the greatness of tzedakah, that you have an announcement weeks in advance about the importance of giving it. You also see about the importance of keeping mitzvahs and staying away from averus. And it's not enough, for example, to just say that you're going to announce about it. You have to actually go and look in person whether it's been accomplished. And you have not only alashkolim, which is a mitzvah eser, but also you can't just have asei toiv. You have to have sur meira as well, exemplified by getting rid of kilayim. So these are all various things that we learn from this Mishnah. They're various lessons in avoda. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Geula Vav Elul. So that Eber was talking about the sicha from the end of Tavshin and Aleph, that v'od v'hu ikur, the main thing is that kain tiyalonu, we should have bias Mashiach v'poyol mamash, and even more so, it shouldn't just be that it will be, but that it was already b'loshen ovar. We should be able to already say that it has happened. Especially as we know, the Rebbeim always talked about how Mashiach's coming will be reported in the newspapers. And in fact, at that time, end of Tavshin Nun Aleph, in 1991, there was all kinds of things going on that were being publicized in newspapers about Hinei Zeh Mashiach Ba, and the Rebbe was saying they should publicize it even more, that Hinei Zeh Melech HaMashiach Ba, and that he's coming, that he already came to Poyo Mamash, L'matim Asarot Tfachim, openly in front of everybody, and all the more so, not just La'inei Kol Boy Olam, but La'inei Kol Yisrael, in the sight of all the Jewish people, take it from Yad Mamash. Okay. Continuing about halachos of Elul, and about Elul, So there's the minhag to go to kivrei tzaddikim, to go to the oil, and to give tzedakah and daven for tachnunim before Rosh Hashanah, that they should daven on our behalf. He does point out you have to be careful that you do have an inyan of dodah shel ha'masim. So it's not that you're directly asking him to do what you want. It's you're asking the Eibishter to have rachmanos in the schus of the tzaddikim, which is how we say it in minor loshen, that b'schus kolat tzaddikim asheichnim kan, or b'schus, and we mentioned specifically the Friedrich Rebbe's and the Rebbe's names. Then you have, as we know, if you haven't seen them 30 days, then you say the bracha asher yotzer eschem adin. You shouldn't go. It brings over here. I think it's originally from the Tzavah of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. You shouldn't go to one caver twice in one day. And another thing is also you have, as some people know, when you look at matzavis, some of the matzavis, you can find some of the ones on the path to the oil that have the letters protruding. You're not supposed to read those. It's kosher l'shicha. The Gemara mentions that reading an inscription on a kever is kosher l'shicha. It causes forgetfulness, and the Rishonim explain that that means specifically where it's sticking out. So you have some of the kavodim in that area that have that. So you're not supposed to. If you do, then a segula, you say the beginning of avas olam until the yached. Okay, We talked about before about not doing malacha erev Pesach after Chatzos, and in general, you're not supposed to do malacha any erev Yom Tov after Chatzos. So that includes when you're taking a haircut erev Yom Tov, erev Rosh Hashanah. Preferably, you should do it before Chatzos. And then, of course, as we know, we have Ataras and Dorim. In fact, an interesting thing, we know all of the acronyms for Chodesh Elul, Anila Dodi Vedodi Li, and all the other ones. There's another one, Lo Yachel Dvorei Kechol, is also Sofer Tevis Elul. When you're saying Ataras and Dorim, you have to understand what you're saying. So if you don't understand the Lashon Kodesh, then you say it in English or whatever, or maybe at least you have in front of you a Hebrew English Siddur, so at least as you're saying it, you can follow along and understand what you're saying.